Texas, and this is VChat edition number 17. This is our vSphere grab bag, and with me I have...
Eric Siebert from vSphereLand.com.
And Simon Seagrave from techhead.co.uk.
Awesome, guys. Well, thanks for being with me. I'm excited to be back, you know, here in the VChat. It's been a while since we've recorded a show, so it's great to be talking about virtualization again. We have a lot of great topics to talk about, a lot of things to catch up on. So I guess let's start with Eric. What have you been up to, Eric?
Lots of writing, and I've been doing some vendor white papers, some other writing, lots of tech target writing and all that, so staying busy with that. Also went over to HP Tech Day a few weeks ago in Fort Collins, Colorado, where they kind of showed off a lot of their new data center technology, which was some pretty cool stuff, some stuff, self-sustainable data centers and that have kind of like a zero footprint when it comes to energy use and that. So it's pretty cool. A lot of neat stuff there we saw, and probably doing a blog post on it pretty soon.
Cool. Hey, Simon, yeah, how about you?
Well, as for me, I have not been doing any writing whatsoever, as those of you who do occasionally visit my website will no doubt see. I've just been flat out with work. The work has been extremely busy. As some of you may know, I'm part of the tech enablement team with the vSpecialists, and we're quite a small team, but we've been very, very busy the last sort of couple of months. So my focus has just been on just work. As you can probably tell at the moment, looking a bit tired. Currently out here in North Carolina at RTP, the Research Triangle, basically prepping for the upcoming EMC World events, which is going to be absolutely awesome. It's good fun, actually. Having a lot of fun at the moment, but just very long hours, and all my time has sort of been sunk into that recently. So that's what I've been doing.
Cool. Now, when is EMC World?
EMC World is coming up early May, so second week of May kicks off. It's quite good. It's basically out in Vegas, so that's going to be interesting. I've never been to Vegas before, so I'm fortunate enough to be one of the few that are heading over there to support the event. So we're really, really looking forward to it. It's going to be great. I doubt I'll get to see any of this as well, because I've heard with Vegas you can sort of enter the building there and you can just sort of stay in these large buildings out there for days on end without seeing any natural light, so you've got no idea what's going on outside. So if you had a sort of like a VLab environment, a hands-on lab environment inside that environment, I don't like my chances of getting really looking forward to it. It's going to be absolutely awesome, really enjoying sort of putting it all together with the rest of my team at the moment.
Cool. How about you, David?
Very cool. Oh, I've just been working on a new train signal video release covering vSphere performance that I hope to be talking about in May. Hopefully it'll be available then. So,
cool. Is it kind of more of a performance troubleshooting or tuning or...?
It's, performance tuning and troubleshooting both.
Okay.
Yeah, so
cool.
Yeah, like vSphere performance in depth, and we're also going to have a vSphere security package coming out soon, and then we're going to combine all that to make a VCAP DCA package. We released our vSphere Power CLI course last month by Hal Rottenberg. So,
how's that doing? Has it been quite popular?
Yeah, it's been quite popular. Before we covered Power CLI, but it was kind of stuck in some of the other packages, and so I like that this is like a standalone, more in-depth Power CLI course. So good stuff. And then we've also got an instructor signed up to do a course on the new VMware Certified Associate desktop on VMware View and ThinApp.
Well, I saw that one. That one doesn't require a class either. I think anybody could take that.
Right, yeah. So they have this new, VCA certification that's below the VCP, because they're going to have a VCP on desktop too.
Oh, okay.
And it doesn't, the VCA doesn't require any class. And, I'm betting money that they're going to have a VCA on vSphere at some point here in the future.
Huh. That'd be cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of entry level certification.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. Cool. So that's what I've been up to. I saw the vExpert, nominations are open again.
Yeah.
Have you guys applied for them?
It looks like they continue to kind of evolve and improve the process in there. And I know poor John is completely splunked with doing that whole thing and that. So it's basically just him running that whole show, and it's a lot of work. So, but they got the new form opened up, and this year they kind of did it where is you could either nominate somebody or you can just kind of self-nominate yourself. And there's two different forms for that. And it's quite in-depth, the form this year. There's a lot. It covers every single area. You have to give, like, specific examples of podcasts, of blog posts, you know, your best work, essentially, and that. So it's pretty all-encompassing. It covers, you know, all the areas where you might have done, you know, work or stuff through the community and that. And, you know, it should be it seems like they're trying to tighten it up a bit, too, this year, and kind of maybe raising the bar a bit more to enter that VExpert club to, you know, kind of set a higher level this year. So I think that runs until May 9th or 6th, where you can either go there, fill out the form, nominate yourself, or nominate somebody else to, you know, maybe get them some recognition as well.
So yeah, with the VExpert, so you know, those of you out there listening to this, definitely you know, if you've been doing stuff throughout the year, whether it's blog posts, being actively involved with the VMware community, definitely you know, if you feel like throwing your hat in the middle to be considered, I would definitely recommend it. Being part of the VExpert program, definitely very rewarding. And like Eric was saying, you know, there's definitely a lot more structured now, and you do get a few goodies, and there's a few spin-offs for being a VExpert as well as obviously the kudos for having that title for the year. So I definitely recommend it.
Yeah, it was a long time coming, but they finally got the licensing straightened out now, so all the VExperts get a one-year license basically to everything, every product that VMware offers and that. So all the way from Workstation and Fusion all the way up to the enterprise products and that. So it's pretty cool where you can, if you have a lab, you could you know, use those licenses in your lab to you know, try out all the products and features and get a lot more knowledge and experience with them. So
definitely needed, because I mean a lot of the people out there who are VExperts are actually active bloggers as well, and people like myself, you know, if you move jobs you move positions, you don't always have access to licenses again to you know, albeit just temporary ones, to run in your environment. So to have access for a full year to spin up whatever you want, I mean, that can only be good for VMware as well, because it means that you get hands on time with their various, you know, products that they've got in their portfolio, and as a result, you know, you start blogging about it, which obviously is good for them, and definitely very positive.
Yeah, and a lot of people make, I guess, noise about the material possessions that you get with VExperts, the gifts they give you in that, which they're kind of way behind on. I think from last year we still haven't gotten those, but to me those don't even matter. What's nice to me is all the other perks, the things like the licenses, the things like the access to beta programs and that you can get into, you know, all the beta programs, the other little events like at VMworld where they have the special meetings with Stephen Harrodin and that. So to me all those little perks combined are, you know, really make the VExpert something that's, you know, really useful to all the bloggers out there. One thing I wish VMware would do a little bit more is maybe market it in that. I think most of the people out there beyond the blogger community don't really know what a VExpert is. And, you know, I know it's still new in that, but it'd be nice if maybe they kind of somewhere on their website, you know, somewhere in a more visible spot, kind of put in something there, kind of what a VExpert is and what it means and all that. So, you know, would get more recognition that way.
Yeah, I agree with you, Eric. Definitely those things are good. I mean, for me, I've been fortunate enough to be a VExpert the last couple of years, but I mean, for me, it's always been, if anything, it's just really the nod from VMware that they acknowledge you, that all the stuff that you do, because I think what a lot of people don't realize as well, it's not just about the blogging. I don't know about you guys, but I get quite a few emails sent through to my personal TechEd email address every week, you know, asking questions about sort of I'm blogging about, and because I blog about VMware stuff, you know, you end up sort of almost being like a sort of semi-informal helpline for them.
Yeah.
You know? A lot of people luckily direct it through the forums, you know, that I've got on my site or through comments, but get a fair, you know, fair amount of emails as well. So, you know, it uses up quite a bit of your own personal time to do that. I actually, you know, I really enjoy it because I enjoy the communication with people and helping people out, but it's all about that. So for me, it's about, you know, just the nod saying, hey, we're appreciate what you're doing and what have you. And definitely those other things you mentioned, very much so. They're the icing on the cake.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's a great program. I just applaud John. I can't thank him enough for, essentially, from what I understand, creating the program and then making, the program, happen every year and continue to improve the benefits. And he's just done an amazing job. So,
full credit. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about VMworld. Did you guys submit any session proposals?
Not me. I did a couple last year and was fortunate to have two of them approved, but I was trying not to be tied down this VMworld, and then, I wanted some more time to not be stuck doing certain things and that, so I didn't, and plus I was kind of busy doing other things. I just didn't have time to put submissions together and that, and the competition's getting fiercer and fiercer, it seems, judging by the number of submissions there are, so none for me this year. How about you, Simon?
Yeah, I submitted two, and I'm part of a joint other one with one of the guys here at work. So 2.5, I guess, is the answer. It's interesting you say about the numbers there. I mean, by the time I got around to submitting mine, and admittedly I was a little bit late. Not late, I managed to do it, but late in the day getting it through. I think the number I had back allocated to my sessions was around in the 1700s or so. So working on the theory that they started at zero and it's sequential, they've definitely got quite a few, session proposals to have a look through there and choose from. So like I say, highly competitive. I've put in a couple that I hope get selected. Once again, sort of based on everything around sort of labs, the SMB space, that's an area that I find quite interesting. Reason being, I mean, the enterprise space is normally covered pretty heavily at VMworld through submissions and the ones that accept it as well. So I think it's a space that's quite often overlooked. So that ties in with what I do on my blog around the labs and everything. So that's sort of the area that I submitted on. So fingers crossed, hopefully one of them gets accepted.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, I submitted a couple sessions as well, so hopefully one gets selected too. I know, Eric, you had some insight into how the sessions are selected.
I'm on the content committee this year, so I'm one of the people that vote on all the sessions. I think there's about a total of 45 of us on that committee that basically have to go through all these sessions now and rate them all on that. So our job is kind of to take a track, or in this case, we have two tracks, a primary and a secondary, and have to go through every single session, read the submission, attach a rating to it of, 1 to 5, or I think it's 1 to 5. It's basically on whether you recommend it, if it needs work, or things like that. So you vote on 1 to 4, actually. You vote on the session, then you have to offer feedback on why you think the session is good, why you think it wouldn't be a good session, maybe some helpful comments on how it could be a better session and that. So it's a lot of work. I didn't think it was going to be this much, but it's actually, I think the total sessions, I got the security and the technology and architecture tracks. I have a total of 400 sessions to go through in that, and time commitment wise, they say it's about 5 to 10 minutes per, so it's a 40-hour job pretty much, at least. So I think total, just going through all the tracks, it looked like there was around 1,400 sessions, and I think they've culled them before we got them, so there was probably more than that. So there's about 1,400 that we have to go through and basically kind of rate them all and that. And then this year again, I think they plan on, after we get through with them, going through the public voting again. So there'll be a public voting period afterwards and that, where the public can kind of rate their own sessions, and then they'll pick some additional sessions from that as well.
Oh, that sounds good. I mean, it's good from an outsider's perspective. It's interesting to get an insight into the process. It's good that they just don't stick them to a wall and throw a few darts at them to see what ones they can who are they running with. So that's quite heartening that it is such an in-depth process there. So that's good.
Yeah, and kind of what I've been seeing from this is, if you're going to submit a session, put a little work into it, because some of these sessions, the outline is one sentence, and That's just something I automatically you're going to say do not recommend, because I mean the session submitter really didn't put a lot of effort into doing something. You know, I realize that you're not supposed to do your whole thing at this point, but you at least should give the general a more detailed idea of what your session is going to be about, and that so we can make a better decision on that. So some of them have some pretty detailed. I know there's a limited number of characters you can put in when you're entering the forms and that, but some of these I was just one sentence for an outline just was like, okay, well, what's your system really going to be about? How can I make a decision on how good or bad it's going to be? So I think if people are going to do these things, they really need to put some effort into it. And there's others I've seen that have kind of done the shotgun approach where they've blasted out a whole bunch of them, and that in particular some of the vendors seem to have done that, where maybe in some cases combining your efforts into, instead of doing a whole ton of sessions, and fewer sessions of more better quality, more detail on that might be better than trying to scatter all these sessions in there and hoping a few stick in that. So but I think overall I saw a lot of great submissions in that, and it's really tough because, there are limited slots available in that, and, it's always unfortunate every year that some of these sessions that could be good sessions don't make the cut in that. So hopefully, hopefully they'll, kind of open it up. I know they kind of limit the amount of sessions because they got to reserve sessions for vendors and for VMware and stuff like that. So, my hope is that they continue to open up and have, I think they did a good job last year of doing the repeat sessions and that and kind of restructuring it so they could get more in there and that. So hopefully this year they'll have more slots available for some of these sessions and that, because there are so many of them. There's a lot of good ones that I'd definitely like to see.
Yeah, that sounds good. I mean, I know internally we had an email out, saying, look, if you'd like to, if you'd like to submit a session, feel free type of thing. But internally, before any of the teams, at least on our team, on the vSpecialist team, it's not like we did just go off on one and start submitting stuff. So we, even internally, before it even got to VMware, went through a vetting process. There was a guy at our end, a guy called Dave Henry, really good guy. So basically he basically vetted everything. And I know, Chad went through, inputted into them as well. So only the best cut sort of made it out from our end here. But so it'll be interesting to see how many to see what slots we get there. So
it'll be good.
So that's like I said, I've just got my fingers crossed. I hope if I can get one through, that'd be good, because it was great fun last year doing the session with Eric and Simon. That was quite good.
Yeah, and I saw a lot of people that. It seemed like people that were kind of new to this, and it's always good, when it's a lot of people are veterans, they do this a lot, they it's old hat to them, but it's always good seeing those people that have never spoken before, making it there and getting an opportunity to tell her, because everybody has something useful to tell everybody in that. It's a shame there's limited spots in that, I think everybody can benefit from anybody's knowledge in that. So it's good to see some of these people that have never spoken before, hopefully making the cut and getting a chance to speak at VMworld.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. Yeah, it's going to be a great VMworld. I mean, I'm already excited about it. There's going to be a vExpert event. We've got a lot of cool sessions, it sounds like. I know Darren Connery's already planned the VM Underground party.
Yeah.
So a lot of exciting stuff. I'm already looking forward to it.
Definitely. As well as that, you've got the VMware labs there as well. They're always great to attend, to get a little bit of hands-on time with the products.
And besides all that, it's Vegas.
That's right.
So that's always
fun. We can already start guessing the band.
Yeah, that's right. That'll be interesting this year. See where they go. Another 80s band.
Well, it has been interesting, guys. It's they're talking about the VMware labs there. So for EMC World, just to give you a bit of insight, we're putting together a hands-on lab environment as well. So we've been doing it for the past year, but on a very small scale. We're talking up to about 20 seats up to now, at our booths and everything. But what we're finding is people really like the hands-on type approach to actually sit down and actually kick the tires on a lot of our products. So what we've done for EMC World this year is we've decided to scale it out, and we're actually doing 200 seats. So definitely a lot larger. And that's, like I mentioned earlier, that's what I'm working on at the moment with myself and the rest of the team. So yeah, what's been interesting to get an insight in the actual amount of work that actually goes into putting these hands-on lab environments together. So you know, the previous VMworlds, I've always gone along and tried to get time to do one or two of their lab sessions there, and it's definitely a lot more than just sort of you know, just putting a monitor on it, a couple of monitors on a desk, you know, with a bit of with a WISE terminal. The stuff that goes on the back end is absolutely mind blowing actually. So it's been quite interesting to get that sort of insight.
Oh, cool.
Wow, that's going to be awesome.
I think it's a huge benefit to the attendees in that they get the chance to be able to, you know, get that hands-on stuff and that, you know, it's not just about listening to people at these events. It's actually, you can get your hands dirty as well. So I think the labs are always a huge benefit to, you know, all the attendees in there, where they can actually get experience with all the products and that.
Yeah, definitely. And that's nice. It means you can get a nice even balance of stuff. Depending on what you do, I guess, you know, whether you're a sort of management or a techie or somewhere in between, it's nice because it means you can go along to these events. You know, you can attend all the PowerPoint-led presentations, so you can get your marketing fix there, or, you know, your technical fix via PowerPoint. And then also you can go and get a bit of hands-on. So
yeah,
it's kind of nice. It means you can mix it up a bit and, you know, mix and match just to what you want to do at the event.
Cool.
A little mini VMworld that I'm looking forward to is the Charlotte VMware User Group. It's May 5th in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I know Scott Lowe's going to be there speaking. Mike Laverick's going to be there. I'm not sure who else. Last year, Chad Sakic and Vaughn Stewart were up there, and they were all on a panel discussion. It was really cool. So I'm hoping they're going to have another cool panel like that. But Train Signals actually hired a video crew, and I'm excited because I'm going to be there. We're going to video the keynotes and the panel discussion. Yeah, we're going to not only post them on our you know, website, but we're also going to stream them live over the internet. So that'll
be cool.
Yeah, my first experience trying to stream, you know, a conference live over the internet. And then we're going to record most of the sessions and post them as well. So.
Oh, nice. Is this considered one of the regional VMUGs, the larger ones that they're doing now?
Yeah,
okay.
It's a regional VMUG.
Okay. Yeah, I'm involved in that now too, and that we're bringing one to Denver. These regional VMUGs are larger VMUGs, or like you said, mini VMworlds, and that where I think we're looking at about a total of 20 sponsors with multi-tracks and all that stuff. So they're definitely, VMware provides you with like a list of some of their own sessions that they'll do there. And then, of course, you have keynotes. We have two keynotes at ours. I think we signed on Veeam and Veeam and Symantec for those. And they're great events because they have like a little a sponsor area where you can kind of solutions exchange or go talk to all the sponsors that are there, and you know, all the keynotes, and it's an all-day event and that. So it's really good stuff.
Yeah, they're expecting
really
cool. Oh, cool.
Wow, that's pretty good. 1,000. That's, like you said, that is like a mini little VMworld. Yeah.
I
like the idea of it.
Speaking of the VMUGs, I got the kind of the new website, the new program now, the VMUG Advantage, and that. Have you guys looked at? I know the new website is the myvmug.org, and that's actually a whole other group has kind of really taken that over now. They kind of branched it off in that to put a lot more attention to it and give it a lot more help. And I've noticed that we get a lot more planning help now and that with it, and that setting up our meetings and that. So it's a real great benefit. We don't have to do, and it's pretty hands off for us now as VMUG leaders. So. But they have,
From what I see from VMware, they're definitely trying to build a lot more structure around the whole VMUG thing, especially in Europe as well. I mean, you know, that's sort of reflected if you go to the VMware users group portion of their site. Definitely the Americas are definitely more seems to be a little bit more organized there than the Europeans. Definitely some countries that are feature on there, but I know there's a lot of countries that do run VMUGs that don't feature on there at the moment, for example. But I know talking to a couple of the VMUG. Nice. They're looking at sort of trying to pull that together over in EMEA as well. And the other thing is, while I'm talking about EMEA, I want to do a cheap plug because London, May the 12th, we've got a VMUG happening there.
Oh, cool.
That's going to be a big one. So that's definitely worth heading along to it in the air. So usual sort of form for an all-day event, I believe. I'll just double check that before I get.
Yeah, and I think it's
goes right throughout the day. Stu Radnich is presenting there, a number of different vendors, then obviously finishes with a VB in the evening. So if you're around, definitely head along to that. It'll be great.
You also get a Massimo there, right?
I don't know that. I don't know. I mean, I know...
Him and Stu have sessions at the same time in that, but it looks like both those guys are going to be there in that, so it sounds like a good time.
Actually, you're right. I'm just looking at the... track one, it's Massimo, and then track two, Stu's presenting at the same time. So they've got some interesting vendors in there as well. They've got Colt, Quest to be there. I know VCE, I think, are sponsoring as well, and possibly EMC, I'm not too sure. So it should be quite good, actually. And having the multiple tracks running at the same time, once again, it's great. It means you can just, cherry-pick the session that you're most interested in there. So, it's definitely worth attending.
Cool. Have you guys looked at I can't remember the details on it, but that new My VMUG Advantage program, I think it's a paid program, but you get a lot of additional benefits from it. I think you get discounts for classes, for conferences and things like that, and some other stuff as well. It didn't seem like it was really that expensive in that, but it looks like a neat little program. I haven't really checked it out in detail, though.
No, I haven't seen that. I have heard of it, but it's, just haven't had time to look into it as yet. What about you, David? Have you heard anything from it?
I've heard the name, but honestly, I haven't read about it yet. So sounds pretty cool, like a subscription discount program or something.
Right.
Yeah. That was my understanding as well. So it'd be good. I mean, the VMUGs are great. I mean, if anyone listening to this or watching this hasn't been to one, I definitely, if you've got one local to you, definitely head out there. If you haven't got one local to you and you feel inclined to sort of maybe set one up, definitely head over to the VMware website. There's links off of there to people that you can contact within the VMUG organization of VMware, and they can definitely tell you how to get started on that. So definitely worthwhile. There's something else, guys, that I'll run past you as well that could be kind of good to do on the VChats here. If anyone sort of got a local users VMware users event that they'd like to plug, if they want to drop us an email through to one of us, we'll give you a plug at the end of the VChat there. That could be quite good. What do you reckon?
Sure.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah. It's always good to let people know about all these things, because there is a lot of great events where you can go out and learn and kind of mingle with people and meet them. And it's always great to kind of get that interaction with other VMware users.
And like you said, if you don't have a VMUG in your area, you can even try to start one. In fact, I'm trying to start one in my area right now. I'm working with VMware's global VMUG to get a VMware user group going in my area. So, make sure you attend one. And if not, try to start your own.
So, yeah, definitely. Just catching up with people and getting to know what other people are doing in your region as well. So very good from that perspective.
Cool. Well, new books. There's two of them out now. I got them here, I think. I got this one here from vSphere PowerCLI Reference from Alan Renouf, Luke Deakins, Glenn Sizemore, Arnim Van Lieshout, and Jonathan Med, which is a pretty big book. Looks real good, actually. It's got a lot of, basically it's all about scripting and that, and how to a lot of sample code in here, and just how to write scripts, and how to automate things in vSphere and that. So looks like a great book and that. So if you're into the PowerCLI or want to learn more about it, this looks like a good one. Edward finally came out with his updated version of, I don't know if you can see it there, vSphere ESX and ESXi and the Enterprise and that. It's basically just a rewrite of his previous book and that, now up to vSphere 4.1 and that. I haven't had a chance to go through it that much, but it's a...
You have this one?
Another good one. No, I haven't got that one yet, actually. And that.
Yeah, I got that one from Forbes Guthrie, Scott Lowe, and Maish.
Yeah, and I haven't got that one. If you guys are listening, you guys can send me one, though. But, so... Looks like there's, lots of good books out there available now. And
actually, talking, talking of books, I'm still obviously away from home at the moment, so I brought Duncan and Frank's book over with me. So I'm reading a couple of pages a night on that, just before bed, where I do get a couple of minutes spare. So slowly.
And on that book, just another short.
It's a good read.
Yeah, that's an excellent book. And about that book, just another related but sort of cheap plug is Train Signal just bought 50 of Duncan's books, and we're going to give them away for the first 50 people that buy my Beastfear Performance course. So, yeah, I'm excited about that. It's an awesome book that I reference like multiple times, you know, through the course.
And, of course, don't forget this book.
Oh, I think I've seen that one.
Yeah.
I think that's good.
Yeah, myself.
Have to do an update at some stage.
I actually have a copy here of Maximum V-Sphere that the limited edition autograph copy here. Yeah, very cool. Very cool.
All right.
So we can't end the show without talking about iPads. I'm thinking that Simon, he was just itching to talk about an iPad. There you go. What's the latest on the iPad update?
I don't know. Have you guys caved in yet and bought the iPad 2? I can't see the justification.
Galaxy Tab. Android.
You have the vSphere app for that?
Not yet, no. Hopefully at some point. Yeah, you know, the iPad 2, you know, it does everything my iPad 1 does. So, you know, on opening day, there was all the hype in that. So I went to Best Buy, and, of course, they only had a couple left, and they were the high-end models, which they didn't want with the 3G and all that. But after that, it kind of wore off, and I'm at the point now where all it is really, a thinner version of the iPad 1 with a little faster processor and stuff like that. So I think I'm okay with this one right now, probably at some point, because I want to get the more memory up to the 32 gig at 16 now. At some point, I'll probably go and get one on that, you know, and you can get good resale value out of your old ones. I think, David, you sold yours on that?
Yeah, I sold mine for like 400 something.
Oh, wow.
I mean, about 410, I think I got for it in the end.
Okay.
And I mean, a new 16 gig is only $499, so, which I still haven't bought yet, by the way. So right now I don't actually own an iPad, but I plan to get another one.
Yeah, I think the
my one, I'm just going to run with mine until it breaks, I think, or at least until the iPad 3 comes out, whenever may be.
It works, and the camera thing isn't a big thing to me, and that I guess it could be more useful, but FaceTime really only works over Wi-Fi, and it really only works with other Apple products and that, so it kind of limits its effectiveness in that. So I think there's some other ones. I think Skype does the video now on the device and that, so as that, I can definitely see it as, you know, doing a lot more video conferencing with it. Having the camera would be nice, but, you know, at this point I'll probably just wait and at some point, you know, upgrade to the new model. And that.
Well, since our last week chat, guys, they've released the vSphere client for the iPad. Now, have either of you had time to sort of download, install, and play with that? And if so, what are your thoughts?
I extensively did. I did a whole article on tips and tricks and some stuff for TechTarget for Switch VMware as well, and that kind of detailing the whole process of installing it and that. And it's good. There's a few bugs. There's a few gotchas. There's a few things you need to know about. There was that security bug that initially was in there that I brought to their attention, which kind of is what caused the delay of the release, actually. They went back and fixed that, where the VCMA component that you have to install, that's essentially the proxy for the iPad app, didn't encrypt all the connections were open in HTTP. They weren't encrypted at all. So all your credentials, everything was going plain text between your iPad device and the VCMA. So that was a huge one that I don't know why they left it open that long, but they finally closed it, released a new version of the VCMA, and then updated the iPad app as well. So that's what caused the delay there for them knocking that out and releasing it.
I find that surprising, actually. That's quite a major oversight from a security perspective. You know,
it's huge.
Whoever was architecting this application, that should have been top of their agenda, you know, because you can have a lot of people out there, maybe more in the SMB space than the enterprise, I guess, who, you know, one person IT team that will want to sort of wander around with their 3G iPad, connect them remotely from wherever they are to control their environment. So like you say, Eric, if that's going over, you know, log on credentials are going unencrypted, you know, that's just going to spell out trouble.
Yeah, that's exactly what I told VMware was. That should have been at the top of your list. It's over features. You should have, you know, that should have been a no-brainer. You know, from the beginning, that should have been in there. So they fixed that. So you need a new version of the VCMA now to use the iPad app. They updated that, and it now uses HTTPS. You know, I ran a sniffer on the old version just to see, and I could see my credentials, you know, plain as day when I logged in. So it's something they fixed. And the app right now, it really only has some basic stuff. You can't do a whole lot with it at this point. And they're going to continue to evolve it, and they're going to release updates to it quicker than they do the normal release cycles for like vSphere and that. So I think we'll see more and more as it evolves and matures. It'll become more useful in that. You know, at this point today, I played with it when it initially came out, but, you know, there's just not a whole lot you can do at this point. You can do some basic power functions on your VMs, look at some performance data. You can't do anything really with hosts. You can't vMotion. You can't do snapshot management. You can't do remote consoles. There's a huge potential there for all that stuff. So I think as it evolves, it'll definitely be, you know, a lot more usable and useful to people.
Do you have to have a VPN configured if you're on the internet to use it?
That's the recommended configuration. You'd never want to put the VCMA in the DMZ, and that absolutely not. So you definitely, from the outside, want to use a VPN. You know, of course, the iPad comes with the built-in VPN that you can configure and set up in that. And in my article, I actually have links to the Apple stuff that actually shows you how to set up the VPNs, kind of the things you need to know about the VPN connection and what devices it works with. So definitely use VPN. Don't do it over, you know, the regular internet with on an open connection.
Okay. Cool. And then what about the Vue client? Have you tried the Vue client?
I haven't had a chance. I downloaded it. No Vue environment set up in my lab, so maybe at some point I'll try that out. But I've heard good things about it, and that it's supposed to be very, very slick interface, very well designed, a lot of real cool. It's not kludgy or hard to use, and that they added the interface itself is pretty easy to use and looks pretty neat. So I definitely look forward to playing with that some more.
Yeah, me too. I haven't tried it, but yeah, looks cool.
Home Labs, any updates there? And mine, I haven't done too much in that. I'm looking at getting a new server. I got two ML110 G6s right now, and I've been looking at the ML150 G6, which costs a little bit more, but it's a lot more expandable than the ML110. It's only about another $150, $200 more than the ML110. But you get things like, instead of only having four RAM slots, it comes with, I think, 12 or 16 RAM slots, the potential of two CPUs. And the big thing is it's on the VMware hardware compatibility list and that, so it's officially branded, approved to use with that. The ML110 works fine for me, but, you know, that one offers a little bit more as far as, you know, more slots and everything, so you can kind of do a little bit more with it. The ML110 G7 just came out, which is the updated version, which I think has some of the Sandy Bridge processors in it, the new Intel processors and that. That looks like a pretty cool unit. They've actually kind of brought it up a little bit now where you can do it's got things like there's a redundant power supply model and that, where you can actually have a little bit more redundancy in it than the basic model that doesn't do any of that. So other than that, I haven't
heard
much.
Yeah, they're going to offer it with a... Yeah, it's interesting. It's still got the like the G6. It's still got the 16 gigabytes sort of memory limit on it, which for most lab environments is fine because I'm still running my ML110 G6 as my main lab server at home there, and I've combined with a couple of microservers as well. They're obviously AMD based, but it's interesting. It looks like they're offering the full range of processors with the G7. So everything from the Intel Celeron model, they got the Pentium, the Core i3, right up to the Xeon. So it's going to be quite a broad price range on it, so pretty much depending on budgets and your requirements, I think it's probably going to fit probably quite nicely in.
Yeah, that four memory slots, so, you know, to get that 16 gig, you have to use the 4 gig DIMMs, which is a lot more expensive. I only got 8 in mine with the 2 gig DIMMs and that because it was just, you know, kind of way too pricey. You know, I think we talked about at one point is using the SSD in there for memory over commitment and that. I think you've done that, Simon, haven't you?
Oh, yep.
So, other than that, storage-wise, I still have my, I just got the Synology unit, the two-drive, I forget the model of it, but it's their two-drive units in that. I went out and bought the 2-gig Hitachi drives, some 200 RPM drives in that, and I haven't had a chance to play with that one too much, but the Synology unit looks like a decent unit, and it has a lot of good features in that. So the iOmega iX4, and then, of course, I've got the Netgear, the 2100 model as well, which is a real nice unit, I think, as well.
Yeah, no, that's a pretty good setup there, Eric. I mean, for what I'm still running, I'm still, like yourself, I'm still running the ML101G6, got a couple of little HP microservers, which is interesting, actually. HP over in the UK are still selling those for £99, excluding the tax after rebates. So they're still, you know, I wouldn't say practically giving them away, but, I mean, that's a pretty good price for someone wanting to start their own little lab server, you know, environment. So
that's a great price. And over here, they're a lot more expensive, though, because I had looked, when you had said that, I had looked over here to see how much they were going for, and I think they were around, I think they were over $300 here in U.S. dollars and that, so yeah, if I could get one at a good price, I'd definitely look at that. I don't, you know, I've kind of reviewed it before, and it doesn't really make too great of a virtualization server because of its, you know, limited processor. It's basically a laptop processor in there and that, but still a nice little compact unit to, you know, use as a, you can make a NAS out of it. You can do a lot of things with it. There's a lot of flexibility there with all that.
Definitely very, very cheap to run as well. I mean, the power consumption on it's minimal and very, very quiet as well. See, I like yourself, I had some real apprehension around how good it would be as a lab server, but I've been quietly surprised, actually, because, really? I mean, I don't know about you guys, like, you know, you spin up VMs in your lab environment, but let's face it, you know, it's only ever yourself or, you know, maybe yourself and a couple of others sort of using it at one time. So the utilization, even on the 1.3 gigahertz dual-core processors that you get in the microserver, the utilization is, even on a low-powered CPU like that, it's still relatively quite low, you know, doing your day-to-day stuff. So my biggest thing with it is it's sort of an 8-gig limit as well, because it's only got two DIMM slots, so you need to populate it with two 4-gig DIMMs to bring it up to that sort of level. But that said, at the prices I was talking about that you can buy it for in the UK at the moment, you know, you could almost justify buying a couple of them and then just running them in a DRS cluster, you know, to distribute your workload a little bit more if you're worried about it. Once again, like the 110G6, the RAID controller isn't identified at all, because it's that sort of kludgy sort of hybrid supposed pseudo RAID controller that isn't really a RAID controller, because it's sort of partly software based. But, you know, if you're using like a NAS appliance, like you mentioned, like the Synology box or the iX4, then that's definitely not an issue.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's a good point, because I really don't stress out. On some of my VMs, I don't have operating systems on. I just have them, you know, just kind of populate the host in that. So, yeah, I don't really stress out my lab at all on that. You know, you don't really need a lot of power in a lab unless you're going to be doing some, you know, running some mega VMs or testing some things like that. So.
Yeah, the biggest two areas I find being a bottleneck in my lab environment is always the memory, usual story, you know.
Okay, yeah.
And also the throughput from disk as well. I mean, that's the other bottleneck that I come across occasionally. But I guess, you know, you start introducing SSD into the mix a lot more now, you know, with the prices around SSDs dropping, that problem will start to go away a little bit more.
Yeah,
And that said, actually, the price of memory DIMMs is dropping as well now. Like in the UK, I think you can buy 8 gigs, so 2 4-gig DIMMs for, I think last price I saw was around about £60 or thereabouts, so it's definitely dropping.
Yeah, I've noticed that as well. That's good.
Yeah, in my home lab recently, I had to power up my old Shuttle Hyper-V server to try out one of VMware's new flings called, it's called vCenter XVP Manager, and it's basically an add-in for vCenter that allows you to manage Hyper-V servers and virtual machines through your vSphere client. Yeah, so I made a video on that. It's actually pretty interesting. I mean, of course, VMware's really designed it to help people import Hyper-V virtual machines. You know, the intentions aren't for you to manage the Hyper-V server forever. Right. You know, it integrates with VMware Converter, and it prompts you to convert the virtual machines from Hyper-V into vSphere. But yeah, I had to get my Shuttle server up and going with Hyper-V to demonstrate it, but it worked pretty well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, the shuttle's a very nice little service as well. I've got a very old shuttle. Unfortunately, it won't run vSphere at all, so I've never tried using it. But I've always quite liked the form factor on the shuttles, and the build quality always seems quite good as well. I just know the price tag, at least in England there, is quite high on the shuttle. You pay quite a premium for that small form factor that's always put me off, unfortunately. But, you know, if you can get them for the right price, yeah, they look pretty good.
Yeah, so I like having the smaller compact size in the lab and that, where, you know, it's not taking up a lot of room in that. You know, it's not like you have a data center in your house and that, so having that small form factor is really nice.
Yeah, definitely. Simon, definitely, especially if space is limited.
Yeah, Simon, don't you have a virtual lab running on your MacBook Pro?
Yeah, I do, actually. I've had mixed success with that recently. I've had two drives effectively fail on me. So my MacBook Pro, I bought the OptiBay kit, which basically removes the CD or DVD drive out of it and enables you to put a second hard disk, 2.5-inch hard disk into your MacBook Pro. So you end up with two disks. So I was running a OCZ SSD. And as well as I've got one of those one of the hybrid Microsoft boards, you know, your traditional spindle disk, all in a single 2.5-inch hard disk case there. So yeah, just before I was leaving to come away, I had my OCZ SSD fail again. It seemed to do it every 6 months. Basically, it would just corrupt the data on the disk, and obviously that's where I was running my OSX operating system from. So I'd, you know, after trying multiple different things to try and recover it, I'd have to just do a fresh install again, and then it was fine. But like I say, it happened about two or three times over a course of about a year. So I've ripped that out now. I've put a Corsair in, and touch wood, so far the Corsair's been pretty good. Then literally a week ago, I had my other drive fail in here that contains all my data. Luckily, I had it backed up. But the weird thing is, it was offline for about a week, and then I was powering up my MacBook Pro last weekend, and the drive came back again because I hadn't removed it from the chassis at all. So I'm not too sure what's going on there. So at the moment, I'm making sure everything's backed up and being a little bit hesitant about putting anything too critical on there. But you know, back to running VMs on there, yeah, definitely. I can get probably 2 to 3 VMs spun up on here quite comfortably in 8 gigabytes worth of memory.
Cool. It's nice being able to take a lab around with you in that, or, you know, going to demonstrate something, customer side, anything, you have that with you at all times where you can kind of play around with it.
Yeah, it's definitely useful for me at the moment, you know, because you know, I'm putting a lot of the lab guides together for the VLabs at EMC World, so okay. It means that I can sort of spin a lot of those up on the laptop and take the screen grabs from there and everything. So I'm finding that very, very useful for that type of thing. So yeah, it's definitely very good. It's worth the investment.
Yeah, especially when you're writing that, and you need to be able to try things out in that. It's nice to be able to just do that in that, because otherwise, you know, you got to verify things or, you know, or whatnot, and that's kind of document what you're writing in that. So, you know, a lot of times I find that I'm constantly having to go to the environment to check something, this and that. So if you take that with you, you know, you got the laptop there to do the writing, and you got the lab with you as well, where you can actually kind of try out some things and do some things, take screenshots and all that for your writing.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, definitely. Actually, one utility I've found absolutely invaluable over the last few weeks has been Snagit. Snagit's been excellent for taking screen grabs. So anyone out there who does blogging or, you know, writes books or even just for internal reports, I definitely recommend you go and check out Snagit. You know, there's a free, I think it's a 28 or 30 day demo you can download. It's fully enabled, so you can try out all the functionality on it. But it's absolutely fantastic. You know, it's from the same people that produce Camtasia. If you're familiar with that. Yeah, if you do anything like that, download it, give it a try.
How much is the paid version?
Oh, it's very cheap, actually. It's definitely, you know, worth the investment. I think it's about $50 US or thereabouts, just under.
Oh, 50. Okay.
But the amount of time it saves, otherwise, you know, you do it the old-fashioned way of control print screen, and then you have to drop it into Paint or Photoshop or something. It has a lot of very cool effects with it as well, so you can sort of, you know, create it like a tear page look. You can drop arrows down on it. You can highlight bits of text, part of the diagram, that type of stuff. So, yeah, very, very intuitive to use, very easy.
Okay.
Yeah, I use Snagit too. Just back to the home labs real quick, one of the things I wanted to add is I've been looking for a public cloud provider that supports running ESX nested in the cloud. So you could create like a virtual ESX, you know, infrastructure. So instead of having your own home lab, you just pay, you know, per hour that you use this virtual lab running in the cloud. So I haven't found anything yet that actually, you know, does that, any provider. But if you guys see something, you know, let me know, or if there's somebody watching this, you know, let us know. Because I think that would be kind of the ultimate thing, is I can just outsource my home lab.
Yeah, and, definitely. That'd be
access
cool.
The virtual one.
That'd be real good.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome tips, guys. Thanks a lot. I'm glad that we're, you know, back doing the VChat again. I look forward to recording some more. This has been a great episode. You know, we covered VMworld, EMC World, Home Labs, VCAP, the Charlotte VMUG, cool utilities, you know, VMware Flings, and
iPads.
Eric's, and iPads. We can't forget iPads. So thanks for joining me, Eric and Simon.
Sure. Thank you.
So thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
See you later.
Thank you for watching this episode of VChat, the latest in virtualization and cloud computing news and how-to. Eric, Simon, and David want your feedback, so send questions or ideas for future VChat topics to vchat@trainsignal.com.